Okay, this is side two of session 29, recorded on February 5th, 2007, and we're finishing up a quote by William Irwin Thompson on page 71 of my book, Vatican Communion with Bob Dobbs, and I was explaining how the far right wing Likud party networks in Israel were working with the leaders of the apartheid regime in South Africa, and they were helping extreme dictatorships down in Central America and Latin America. So whatever it was, I mean, if you listen to Mae Brussels, Dave Emery, or LaRouche, they were part of the global gold, arms, and drugs network. And there was this faction that was in Israel that had political power. And they aligned with neo-Nazi racial superiority syndromes. So Thompson kind of hints at that when he says these gangs in Israel and South Africa would make a last stand to preserve the great white race. That's generally considered a neo-Nazi attitude or a far right wing attitude, I guess, in some extreme forms. So that's the point. Is there's a lot of, you don't just have to read LaRouche. There's a lot of historical stuff, and Mark Rich is an expression of that syndrome.
He was the guy that Clinton pardoned?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Mark Rich was in trouble in the early 80s because he traded illegally, banning the rules the American government laid out after Khomeini took over Iran. People, Americans weren't allowed to trade with Iranians. Well, Mark Rich did this secret trading with the Iranians, and part of his network, places where he laundered the money and safe house himself was in South Africa. And people have tracked him doing that with that network was involved with Israel, too. So Mark Rich was pardoned by Clinton, and he today is still controversial about what he's doing. So people still say that he's part of these shadow government networks, the secret, you know, guns, arms, gold, and drugs.
I don't get the connection between Israel and South Africa. They're different cultures on different sides of the planet. They have no economic interdependence or reliance upon each other. How did they establish a relationship?
Well, apparently, I think they do have an economic bond. I think Israel did a lot of trading with South Africa in the 70s and 80s.
Oh, okay. What did South Africa have to trade?
Well, it was an industrialized country. We're talking about white-ruled South Africa.
Oh, okay.
Are you thinking in terms of Africans in South Africa?
I guess. I don't know the...
No, you know about South Africa.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Very, very industrialized culture.
I just didn't know. Well, I didn't know what they had to export. I never thought about it.
Yeah, and you know, Israel's right beside Africa, so they're looking for entities to trade with in Africa, and South Africa was one of them.
Mm. Okay.
So so that's the context for what Thompson's getting at here.
Right. Okay.
So let's go on to the final page of the, unless you have something else to say.
No.
The final page of the Thompson section, which is page 73, right-hand side of the book. And we have three quotes, and they're good quotes. And the first one's short, and it's from, I'll look up the index, because at the end of each quote, there's a little code. The code in this quote is GK-WT-195, which means, you look up in the back, GK stands for an essay in a book that Thompson put out in 1987. Lindisfarne, his association, had a press out of Great Barrington. I think it's in Massachusetts. Great Barrington, Lindisfarne Press, 1987, published the proceedings and lectures by various members of Lindisfarne based on a symposium done in 1981. And I think Varela and Abraham and Lovelock and Margulis were at that symposium. So the lectures they gave were presented as written essays in a book called Gaia, A Way of Knowing Political Implications of the New Biology. So it's technically it's Gaia, : A Way of Knowing, - Political Implications of the New Biology. And that would be the new science that Thompson has become enthusiastic about, a new Western science.
Mm-hmm.
And the particular essay Thompson has in there is called Gaia and the Politics of Life. So that's what we're reading from. So we have this short quote from page 195 of that collection of talks and essays.
The world of electronics is capital T top and capital P pop culture. I'll read that again. The world of electronics is top and pop culture. It's an energizing of opposites. The elitist science of Stanford, Caltech, and the Silicon Valley, and the media and musical reproductions of Hollywood.
So here's Thompson picking up on McLuhan's theme of culture's our business. And it's an information society, and knowledge is not limited to book knowledge and book categories and book evolution and literary studies or scientific studies. Knowledge includes the world of entertainment. That's a kind of information and culture. So he's saying the top-down culture, which is the literary hierarchical culture of individualism and bureaucracy that McLuhan lays out in the Gutenberg Galaxy, and the pop culture is the electronic polycentric world that goes around the literate environmental legacy.
We might think of that as the bottom up.
Yes, and so the bottom up is what McLuhan called the participatory, the involved situation where the audience gets in the act. And McLuhan said that in the global theater, there are no passengers, everybody's crew, in the sense that one sense, besides the top 40 radio and then all the other kinds of rock music and hip hop cultures where you don't have to be a great technical musician, a classically trained musician or jazz trained musician to do well in the music industry. You have a what's called a lower common denominator kind of music and lyrics that the whole audience can get involved with, can identify with. As McLuhan would say, teenage music is not music per se, it's an environment. So it's a mixed media environment. So that, in quotes, democratic, tribally involved replay in pop culture is an important part of the global market, and therefore the old traditional knowledge industries, what we call science and art, they had to hire PR agents and go into advertising just to be seen to get customers.
Yeah.
So the energizing of opposites, I would call a tactile relationship, interpenetration, and the disconnect. See, tactility is not just total merger; it's also allowing you to disconnect. So the interpenetration and the ability to withdraw and maintain autonomy, the interplay of these opposites is a tactile situation. And so you have someone like Stuart Brand, who came out of the hippie culture and was on Ken Kesey's bus across the United States and part of the acid tests in San Francisco. He gets interested in computers, and he hangs out with the scientists in the late 60s and starts propagating for the computer culture. So here's this hippie working with the most advanced elite scientists in Stanford, at least in the computer world. So that's an example of the mixing of top and pop.
Mm-hmm.
And then Stuart Brand goes on to create Wire magazine, which was a pop cultural phenomenon in the magazine world, but PR for the advanced high-tech dot-com developments.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one example. But it's like Andy Warhol said. He said, in the 60s, everybody in all parts of society jumped into the same arena and started hanging out with each other. And then in the 70s, everybody dropped all their friends of the 60s. So the tension between the top and the pop culture is what's been going on for 40 years. And part of that is the neocon reaction is an attempt to shift the balance more to the top culture values.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the 60s, the pop culture had the edge.
Right.
At least in its charisma and what the population thought was going to happen. And then you have in the 90s a virtual form of the 60s where people felt that everybody could get involved with the elites and keep the elites in check by the so-called freedom and autonomy of the dot-com technology. So that was a high-tech version of the 60s favoritism of the pop culture over the top.
Right.
Over the top down.
Well, yeah, and actually I think he's saying they energized each other. It's an energizing of the opposites, the elitists and the Hollywood guys.
Yeah, Thompson quotes Gregory Bateson all the time, the difference that makes a difference. So in tactility, the difference is strange. It's there and it isn't. So it's like the corpus callosum in between the left and right hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
Separate things, but they work together to make a coherent, involving mosaic.
Right. So, yeah, he's talking about the energizing of opposites, the elite science of Stanford, Caltech, and Silicon Valley versus media and musical reproductions of Hollywood. Well, that sounds like a healthy way to keep things moving. I heard a guy recently being interviewed who was a scientist and an engineer, and he asked whether or not he thinks America's going to be able to keep its edge in terms of leading the world in the future. And he said, well, only if we continue to produce new inventors, because we're not going to lead the world in manufacturing and industrial development. That's all gone overseas. If we can continue to create new inventions. But he said, the problem is, he says, when I was growing up, I don't know how old this guy was, probably 60 years old or something. He says, when I was growing up, it was really hip to be an engineer. You know, you were looked up to if you were an engineer working at Boeing or something like that. But today, the kids don't have that image, so they don't strive to learn the math and the science.
Yeah, that's the problem, is too much left hemisphere, too much right hemisphere, weakening the left hemisphere, in McLuhan's terms.
Yeah.
And an engineer is more of a hardware idea. Now people, they don't want to make planes or cars or be an industrial engineer. They want to be a digital engineer, have their own YouTube, make their own videos.
Yeah.
So, yes, that's why McLuhan said you got to turn off the electric environment occasionally to balance out the long-range erosion of the top-down left hemisphere structures, which is important to have as part of the cultural ecology.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the dilemma. And now you have today, the pop culture celebrates being dumb.
Yeah.
Which is a put-on. But still, the kids, someone was telling me the other day that they can't keep, this is a guy who works for Starbucks in Toronto, he says they can't, and I don't know if this is for the whole North American corporation, but in Toronto, they have a real problem keeping employees. The kids only work a short time, and then they take off. And so the money invested in training the kids, hoping they stay there to run the coffee dispensers, has no staying power.
Yeah.
So they got a real problem.
Yeah.
So I said, well, they're turning African, in the sense of the way McLuhan described anthropological studies in the book Gutenberg Galaxy. He talked about Africans when a bit of industry or non-rural work came in, that the Africans didn't have a sense of 9 to 5. They just came and went when they wanted. They didn't have that linear industrial visual space sense of organizing their energies.
Right.
They're very casual. And they like to live a life of what we call slack. And that's largely a right hemisphere culture. So the electronic society is doing that to the kids growing up in North America. They sit around and don't do much physical labor or get themselves working in a 9-to-5 routine.
Mm-hmm.
So education schools has had to adapt to that. So they're not into a linear, progressive goal orientation in their work. So you can't get them to stay at something for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a crisis there.
Yeah.
But where you can get the reason those industries go to Asia is that those cultures are just discovering visual space. They think it's a novelty to have a goal and be disciplined and run a machine.
Yeah,
plant.
Sure.
Though, I just read lately that they're having troubles in Japan, but Japan is an advanced society compared to India and China.
Oh, yeah.
But the kids don't like to
conform. Japan is advanced compared to America. They've had high-definition TV probably for 5 years now. We're just getting it.
Right. But the Japanese kids, they say the conformity, the industrial conformity that Japan brought in since the 50s, is too much restraint, probably on what I would say quadriphenic citizens, more and more quadriphenic, since they're so much in the digital environment, that the kids really rebelling, and they just hang out in their bedrooms at home, at their parents' home, and they hide, and they don't like working at all. And so they got that problem. And they say they're not creating enough children, so that in a few years the Japanese population will be 80% old people.
Mm-hmm.
So the chemical body's got a problem here with the discarnate excesses, right?
What are the four parts of the quadrophenia?
Juggling your chemical body, your astral body, your TV body, and your digital body.
Right. Okay.
So the Japanese have to confront that. So I brought in this quote by Thompson just to show that he's aware of the McLuhan element. And I put it in there after him talking about the value of McLuhan, and this is an update of not just, as in the previous quote, talking about the polycentric electronic. He understands the structure of the East and the West, or the top-down, the bottom-up going on in North American and Western culture, and then eventually around the world.
Right.
So it's a good statement. And this is supposedly a mystic, but he's talking about, old-fashioned mystic, or that was part of his audience. He's talking about the discarnate ecology.
Right.
So should we go on to the next quote?
Yeah.
Which is from, I think, 1978. I look up the code, EW. Yeah, Thompson did a book in 1977 called Evil and World Order, put out by Harper and Row in New York. And this one kind of deals with some of the elements of it is deals with the Trilateral Commission that people were starting to think about in the late 70s,
mm-hmm.
middle 70s. He takes on some of that stuff, and he talks about the Council of Foreign Relations and how they plan to manage the global village, or what McLuhan would call the global theater. And this quote here is a quote that talks about the creative process and what, how does one become an artist or an intellectual in this world that is confronting the fact that culture is our business. All right, so this is from pages 77 and 78 from that 1977 book called Evil and World Order.
What is making the process move more rapid? What is making the process move more rapidly is not just global television, but global mysticism. Individuals less centered in their egos are discovering the patterns of convergence and synchronicity in their lives and the life of the new culture. It almost seems as if the consciousness of a radical planetary...
Racial,
yeah, I did keep doing that. Almost seems as if the consciousness of a racial planetary being were surrounding civilization, compressing it and turning it into a miniaturized artifact of the past. The artist caught inside civilization feels the pressure and is demoralized because he's holding on tight to his civilizational identity. Witness mythologizing of the ego in the work of Norman Mailer. It is the work of the artist to reinterpret the world, but since a civilized artist cannot understand this new world, he has chosen to perish with the old. With the death of the art of civilization, the art of planetization is born. Once the romantic artist like Yeats made the emerging nation like Ireland conscious of its national identity, now the planetary artists are trying to make the races conscious of their emerging planetary identity. The old artists sculpted with stone, painted on canvas, or told stories about a day in the life. But whether it is conceptual art, nonfiction, or the music of Stockhausen, the new medium is information itself. The place where information is densest is the university, and that is why many of the new artists have come out of that setting. Not as artists in residence or professors of creative writing, for those are civilized roles, but as jugglers of information, where the expert is enthroned and the fool is forced to say, quote, uncle.
Oh, where the expert is enthroned there.
Is enthroned there, the fool is enforced to say, quote, uncle, but masks his subversion by crying, quote, nuncle.
Okay, I'll read that again. Where the expert is enthroned, there the fool is forced to say, uncle, but masks his subversion by crying, nuncle. Uncle is like saying, I give up. Remember that?
Yeah.
But I don't know what nuncle means, but I guess it's pretending, he's not saying I give up, but he's trying to go around the expert.
Hmm.
So he's thinking of McLuhan and Bucky Fuller as artists coming out of academia, or out of the university here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the next paragraph.
To understand contemporary culture, you have to be willing to move beyond intellectual definitions and academic disciplines. You have to be willing to throw your net out widely and be able to take in science, politics...
Be willing to take in.
Mm-hmm. In science, politics, and art, and science fiction, the occult, and pornography.
Let me read that. You have to be willing to throw your net out widely and be willing to take in science, politics, and art, and, italicized, and science fiction, the occult, and pornography.
Mm-hmm. Okay. To catch a sense of the whole in pattern recognition, you have to leap across the synapse and follow the rapid movement of informational bits. You treat, in a paragraph, what you know could take up a whole academic monograph. But jugglers are too restless for that. The object of the game is to grasp the object quickly, then give it up in a flash to the brighter air.
So you see how he's confronting the dilemma of the literate individual creative scientist, artist, thinker, with the new multimedia environment.
Yeah, he's having to break out of his Steiner mode here and actually confront McLuhan.
Yeah, now he hasn't done that yet. He's still in the Steiner mode because he says, what is making the process move more rapidly is not just global television, but global mysticism. Then he goes on to describe all this cultural stuff, which is not necessarily mystical.
Mm-hmm.
Might be Western artistic mysticism, but I don't think science, politics, art, science fiction, the occult, and pornography are traditionally aligned with mysticism. But he hasn't changed. He hasn't gone through the late 70s crisis where his Aquarian view would be manifest in a universal parliament, if you remember that quote at the beginning of the Thompson section. And so he's using the word mysticism, yet he's dealing with Western creativity. So he points out that Mailer, it's a valid statement, mythologizes the civilizational phase, the literate writing ego. And that's what Norman Mailer did, mythologize the ego. But that was making, as Norman Mailer looked to write the great novel, the great American novel, he became marginalized in the 70s, in the 80s and 90s, and Mailer admitted that. He still occasionally produced a book and it would sell well, but he said Mailer himself by the 90s was saying that he felt on the margins and not involved in the center of cultural activity that he'd been part of in the 50s and 60s.
Because he could no longer grok it, or because his writing was obsolete, or what?
Yeah, writing, not. He says in the 90s he started saying maybe the novel is obsolete as a form. He just came out with a new novel, and that's an interesting side. He finally fulfilled my prediction on my chart. If you look in the Dobbs Quadrant, the novel, after the Illuminatus Trilogy of Robert Anton Wilson in the Croker Quadrant, the novel in my quadrant is Harlot's Ghost, Part 2.
Oh.
And Harlot's Ghost came out in the early 90s and been waiting all these years for Part 2, and it finally came out in a new book on... Hitler. It's called, I think, The Castle in the Forest. But that's another topic. I went and saw him speak last week, and interesting stuff came out of it. But I just want to say that finally, you see, I don't list Harlot's Ghost Part 1. I have Harlot's Ghost Part 2, what has not manifested when I make the chart in 95-96.
Mm-hmm.
But I say that what he's going to produce in the second part would be relevant to the Dobbs Quadrant. Basically, the novel is about a lieutenant of Satan in the early 20th century is assigned to grow a monster, and that monster is Adolf Hitler. So it's about the raising of Hitler from birth to, or the, creating the conditions for raising Hitler from birth to about the age of 16, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so this lieutenant colonel of Satan, or Lucifer's army, is revealing his techniques of what Lucifer wanted him to do, and he's hoping Lucifer won't do this, won't notice that he's revealing secrets. Mailer's theme is that cybernetics favors Lucifer over God, and therefore the lieutenant colonel of Satan's army is hoping Satan is so distracted with locking down his power through the new cybernetic revolution that he won't notice a guy writing an old book.
Hmm.
And Mailer, he is a colleague of McLuhan in a way. He thought about McLuhan. And in the 70s, he said, I remember this in an interview from a magazine in the 70s, he said, he's looking at a situation where the ancient battle between God and the devil is being confused and threatened by technology itself, that it's making both God and the devil a little off balance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a simple way of talking about what McLuhan talked about. So I've been waiting for him to develop that theme, and the part that he read at the Barnes & Noble the other day when he promoted this book, he talked about that part, about the role of cybernetics, and Lucifer thinks that he's going to get an advantage from it. But this theme is developed in the new novel.
Mm-hmm. And how is that a part two of The Heartless Ghost?
Heartless Ghost, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but real simply, Heartless Ghost is about a CIA guy. It ends in 1963, and then Mailer was going to go with the Kennedy assassination on up to the 80s, say. And the CIA gave a double agent for the KGB. So he said after the book came out in the early 90s, he lost interest in writing about the CIA. And he went, but he had gathered all this material, so he started in the middle 90s starting to work on it, complete the novel, making part two. But when he walked into the room where the novel was, the muse stopped him at the doorway and said, no, don't do this book. So that, and that was his metaphor for saying, you know, he wasn't encouraged by his muse to be inspired to write the book, so he didn't know what he was going to do. Then Ron Rosenbaum's book came out in the late 90s called Explaining Hitler, I think it is, and it's in-depth interviews with 15 different experts giving 15 different ways of explaining evil and Hitler. He said that book inspired him to... because it left out an angle he had, which I bet was the McLuhan technology angle. Because when I looked at Ron Rosenbaum's book, I noticed he left out the McLuhan explanation of Hitler. And Mailer said he was inspired by what was left out in the Ron Rosenbaum book, and that led to him writing this novel.
Mm-hmm.
So,
McLuhan referred to the electronic envelope as the Prince of the Air.
Yeah. So let's not get too distracted, but it's interesting. Mailer's still writing novels, but he's wrestling with the same issues that Thompson is wrestling with.
Mm-hmm.
But Thompson understands that one shouldn't specialize. So Thompson is a more prominent thinker in a way than Mailer in the 70s and 80s. I mean, he's involved in interacting more with intellectual life than Mailer was in the 70s and 80s. So Thompson's explaining the strategy he was going to take and how to juggle. He's intuiting quadrophenia here.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying you've got to work with all forms of information, not one particular form of information or one particular medium. So he says you have to juggle all these different... Now, he points out cultural content, which is the reverse or the mirror side of McLuhan. McLuhan's juggling different media forms. Thompson juggles different media content or specialties.
Mm-hmm. Now, I kept stumbling over this word racial, and it's almost, I think it's because I'm not quite grokking what he's saying here. It almost seems as if consciousness of a racial planetary being or surrounding civilization, compressing it and turning it into a miniaturized artifact of the past. Consciousness of a racial planet. What does he mean by racial? Does he mean like mixed, all the races mixed into some new hybrid race?
Yeah, being a mystic, he's still referring to a first nature of the anthropomorphic, what I call the human being. So, now what's interesting to me is that he's echoing what was channeled through Cosmic Awareness, that Rai returned to the plane of essence, and Cosmic Awareness talked about the Kahuna ring that went around the planet.
Mm.
And this is a good description of it, a racial planetary being surrounding civilization, compressing it and turning it into a miniaturized artifact of the past. You know, we've talked about how he understands what I would call the holeopathic process, the shrinking of technology so it's not so huge and Leviathan, gargantuan in terms of human communities. It's becoming human culture friendly. No, not culture-friendly. Human and user-friendly. Mm-hmm. The anthropomorphic sense of being not swallowed up by technology is a pattern that starts to emerge with the digital era in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And he picks up on that.
He's referring to a racial planetary being. So this would be maybe like the Chardin's new
yeah.
sphere?
Yeah. No, he's a fan of Tyre, or he writes about Tyre de Chardin's new sphere. Right.
Mm.
So it's like anthropomorphic. It's a human planetary being.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess. I mean,
was Tyre de Chardin's new sphere a anthropomorphic projection, or was it a technological projection?
Was it a technological
oversoul, like the human beings all being intermeshed together through an electronic network to create like an electronic oversoul, or was it more of an anthropomorphic oversoul?
Well, it's both. It's definitely technological, but the human species would change in some form. So what Tyre de Chardin projected is a utopian version highlighting the services of the discarnate state that McLuhan juggled as both having services and disservices, and then Croker develops even more extreme. So when we get into Croker next session, we're going to see the naivety of Tyre de Chardin in terms of how one described whether it was anthropomorphic enhancement or a new technological enhancement. That's the question.
But here where Thompson's talking about the consciousness of a racial planetary being, you think he may be talking about more like Tyre de Chardin.
Yeah. Tyre
de Chardin. Racial planetary being surrounding civilization and compressing it, and turning civilization into a miniaturized artifact of the past. Well, that,
remember we did that
in that whole
section of the. Thompson, earlier in the Thompson section, we did page 57. He says, all the artifacts and cultures of the world were miniaturized in Stuart Brand's Whole Earth Catalog, and although people grooved on wood stoves and fantasies of self-sufficiency, the catalog itself was absorbing everything into its giant collage. All culture was miniaturized as the preparation for stuffing it into one of Stuart's beloved space colonies. So the point is here is that, remember, the new medium is information. So particular media, particular technological phase of culture, all of those phases will be merged into, and that would be the past, will be merged and miniaturized into the digital flow of information mm-hmm. and pattern recognition. Remember, McClure said information overload equals pattern recognition. So Thompson is really picking up an important McLuhanist insight here, is that the specialties, and each culture is a specialist bias in retrospect.
Yeah.
They all will be shrunk and propped up as tourism, while the real action is in a non-specialist, integrated cultural violence almost.
Right.
Cultural, as McLuhan would call it, macroscopic gesticulation of PR mania, which is what happened in the 80s and 90s, as people branded themselves and offered themselves as icons in all the different fields.
Right.
And all those sports, Hollywood, everything became riddled with excess money and dope, all trying to deal with the information medium.
Mm-hmm.
So Thompson's picking up this. He's still naive. He's still thinking in terms of global mysticism. But he knows that he's talking about a new global mysticism, and it sounds tired, shoddy in that first paragraph, but then he's describing the juggler of information and how you can't remain just in the university. You pretend you're giving up, but you move out into the post-university environment and cry nuncle.
Yeah.
Like pretending to give in but stooping to conquer.
Yeah, or you could, or he's saying here, if now that after civilization has been compressed and miniaturized into an artifact of the past, if you're an artist who still thinks he's inside of civilization, you end up mythologizing the ego like Norman Mailer does in Harlot's Ghost.
Yeah, and mythologizing any of the artists. Any of the arts. Look what happened to cities' symphonies. All of them are bankrupt by the 80s. Got to be funded by governments. They can't even keep the classical orchestras going.
Mm-hmm.
That's all over North America. So he says the old artists worked with stone or canvas or told stories. But whether it is conceptual art, nonfiction, or the music of Stockhausen, the new medium is information itself, not the particulars. And I think that's what Zappa understood.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't just a musician. As Zappa once said, media is all there is. So Zappa turned the media environment into a musical canvas to work with.
Mm.
And he would play. He was a top advanced thinker in music, but he would make fun of the pop culture or interact with pop culture, make fun of the Beatles or whatever was happening.
Right.
Zappa was a musician in the tactile interplay of energizing the opposites.
And this is what Thompson's referring to as one of the new jugglers of information. You're juggling cultures rather than, say, Norman Mailer, who's an ego inside of a culture trying to...
Right, like the Tetrad Manager juggles cultures and media structures. But then it all becomes into a blurred...
What does that do to the ego when the ego is no longer contextualized within a culture, but it's juggling cultures?
Right, and the fact that you have to deal with the information as medium and new information figures are surfacing, you got to juggle the information fads,
mm-hmm.
the images they produce. So... by the 80s, you have businessmen, billionaires, millionaires, Hollywood celebrities, and rock musicians, and New York fashionistas, and theater people, and digital people all hanging out with Andy Warhol.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a reflection of this where Thompson says, you have to be willing to throw your net out widely, be willing to take in science, politics, and art, and science fiction, the occult, and pornography.
Mm. Why was Andy Warhol a nexus for that kind of whirlpool?
How was he?
Yeah.
Well, he had a good understanding of McClone.
Mm.
And he understood that in New York City, which was the heart of the Android meme, in the sense of culture is our business, he knew if he hung out in New York, he'd have access to all these people. And so there would be science fiction people at his party, too, and pornography people.
Oh, okay.
And occultists. So he juggled them all, but... He was dealing with cultural content.
Yeah, and then his art production was kind of mixed media, wasn't it?
Yeah. His art production was just showing up at Studio 54, which is was happening around the time that Thompson wrote this.
Mm-hmm.
He'd just show up on the scene.
Yeah.
And be part of the gossip world. Because information, the word that makes the market, as we said, McLuhan spelled out, was the world of gossip and information. That was the new art form. So Thompson is, at least as a writer, he always wanted to be a writer, is confronting the questions of a writer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, honestly, with a good understanding of McLuhan. Pretty good understanding. Not perfect. But let me just read, since we're coming up to the last quote, which is, "We slay with technology and save the victim with art." That's a very important quote by Thompson, and he wrote it in his book, again, the book Imaginary Landscape, subtitle Making Worlds of Myth and Science, came out in 1989. It's italicized in his book, and I present it italicized. "We slay with technology and save the victim with art." That's his variation and update of McLuhan's theme of a new environment turns the old environment into an art form. Remember that theme?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which was the theme that Thompson always played with from McLuhan. He got that much from McLuhan in the 60s. He used it in the 60s writings, in the 70s and 80s. It wasn't until the 90s he had to expand his understanding of McLuhan, start thinking about the tetrad and that, and media forms, rather than just media content, that this statement is him...
Well, he's kind of saying that once we've come in with the new technology, remember McLuhan said that the electric technology, what was his metaphor? What's that instrument those guys use, the box that you squeeze together?
Accordion?
Accordion, yeah. He says like it's in a sound of an accordion across an orchestra or something like that. The new technology comes in and it's like it slays your cultural identity. Then the artist comes in and tries to prop up art as a way of giving you a sense of comfort and your old cultural identity back.
Yeah, I think it wasn't McLuhan said it was a bagpipe that went across the orchestra?
Bagpipe, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's part of it, but it's more complex. But let me just, to lead into that, to this last statement, I haven't reread the quotes that you read. I just want to review them, since we're coming near the end of this side of the tape. And let's put all these thoughts together of the last quotes, Moscow Coast we've been doing tonight. Okay?
Okay.
So here it is. First quote. History is rarely a happy place. So there is always a danger that the end of the Cold War could bring a racial convergence in which a new European civilization proposed to the Russians by Govardal, one that stretches westward from Vladivostok to Vancouver, will try to stand off, quote, the yellow peril, unquote, of a rich Japan and a prodigious China. If the cultural bifurcation of the world continues along these lines, then zones of cultural entropy in Africa, the Middle East, and Latin America will so terrify entities such as Israel and South Africa that they will never surrender to forces of liberal tolerance but will become entrenched technological fortresses in which the great white race makes its last stand. But persuaded by my years of living in Toronto and partaking of the insights of the Torontonian school of Innocent McLuhan, I do not think that the formations of 19th century empires can now reassert themselves, for they were built on print bureaucracies and the center-periphery dynamics of railways and shipping lines. In a global ecology of mind, which is like that sentence, racial planetary being, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got that?
Yeah.
In a global ecology of mind that is polycentric and electronic, I think that the nativistic movements of pre-modernist Islam and modernist Europe are both bound to fail, just as the ghost dance and Louis Riel's rising of the Métis failed in North America. Precisely in order to avoid a world organized along lines of racial hatred, my allegiances are to such universal forms of human association as are expressed in Francesco Varela's Western Science and Eastern Buddhism. So Varela is an example of someone who's a scientist and yet not rejecting religion. Even though it's not Catholic religion, it's Eastern Buddhism, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have that quote where he's seeing the electronic, polycentric world looming up against the old industrial artifacts. And then I put the next quote in to transition to the paragraphs we just did about juggling different cultural content. The transition of the electronic description is this next quote: the world of electronics is top and pop culture. Top and pop capitalized. So the world of electronics is top and pop culture. It is an energizing of opposites. The elitist science of Stanford, Caltech, and the Silicon Valley, and the media and musical reproductions of Hollywood. And of course, in Hollywood, media and musical, that would be rock music too, not just Hollywood cinema. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, then the next quote, now we go back to 1977, because these last two quotes were in the late 80s, or at least the middle 80s and late 80s. And now we go back to 19... Because this quote of the world of electronics is from a conference in 1981. So this early 80s quote, but Thompson's definitely out of his 70s mentality. But now we go back to a quote from the 70s mentality where he actually picks up on what he's going to be. He's predicting how he's going to deal with the electronic environment, even though he hasn't technically made the adjustment personally. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So this quote is from 1977. He says, what is making the process move more rapidly is not just global television, but global mysticism. Now, I have in my chart, Thompson's in the computer quadrant, which is after McLuhan's TV quadrant, and I say he has the universal government and the astral body interest. That's global mysticism. So he's actually picking up the effect of computers past the effect of television, right?
Right.
So I'll read that again. What is making the process move more rapidly is not just global television, but global mysticism. Or the digital world. I'm throwing that in. Individuals less centered in their egos are discovering the patterns of convergence and synchronicity in their lives and the life of the new culture. It almost seems as if the consciousness of a racial planetary being were surrounding civilization, compressing it, and turning it into a miniaturized artifact of the past. The artist caught inside civilization feels the pressure and is... Do it again. The artist caught inside civilization feels the pressure and is demoralized because he's holding on tight to a civilizational identity. Witness the mythologizing of the ego in the work of Norman Mailer. It is the work of the artist to reinterpret the world, but since the civilized artist cannot understand this new world, he has chosen to perish with the old. So that's his put down of Norman Mailer. Next paragraph. With the death of the art of civilization, the art of planetization is born. That's the art of planetization is born. Once the romantic artist like Yeats made the emerging nation like Ireland conscious of its national identity. Now the planetary artists are trying to make the races conscious of their emerging planetary identity. Now, this is a bit limited compared to what McLuhan thought the planetary artists should do, but that's another topic. Continuing with Thompson, the old art is sculpted with stone, painted on canvas, or told stories about a day in the life. But whether it is conceptual art, nonfiction, or the music of Stockhausen, the new medium is information itself. Because remember, in the global theater, information is being massaged by the ad agencies, the pollsters, and government in general, and corporations. So it's a bit limited to talk about it just as the artist working with the information environment. Mm-hmm. Requires more specificities and sophistication, which Thompson will have to develop later.
Mm-hmm.
The place where information is densest is the university, and that is why many of the new artists have come out of that setting, not as artists in residence or professors of creative writing, for those are civilized roles, but as jugglers of information. And I would think, and I think Thompson was thinking of people like Bucky Fuller and Marsh McComb. They were new kinds of information jugglers. So then Thompson continues, where the expert is enthroned, there the fool is forced to say uncle, but masks his subversion by crying nuncle. So that's what Fuller and McClune did. They pretended to play the fool. To understand contemporary culture, you have to be willing to move beyond intellectual definitions and academic disciplines. You have to be willing to throw your net out widely and be willing to take in science, politics, and art, and science fiction, the occult, and pornography. To catch a sense of the whole and pattern, I don't do that again. To catch a sense of the whole and pattern recognition, you have to leap across the synapse and follow the rapid movement of informational bits. Now he's describing digital tactility there, the extension of the interval of the synapse, of the central nervous system. Thompson says, you treat in a paragraph what you know could take up a whole academic monograph, but jugglers are too restless for that. And that's what McLuhan, why Bucky Fuller and McLuhan were...